You clock out. We clock in. Welcome to the Torn by Sports Lunch Break.
Welcome to this edition of the Torn by Sports Lunch Break. Joining me today is Kerry Eckers from the Portland Tribune covering Oregon State. How are you doing today, Kerry?
Doing great. Good, Grant. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm in Salt Lake. The weather could be a little bit better, but otherwise, it's pretty good here.
Not very nice in Oregon either, so you're doing all right.
All right. I'm glad we're on even footing then.
Yeah.
Well, you know, looking at Oregon State, I know outside of watching the drive, because I'm fairly familiar with Oregon State in that sense, I know a lot of Utah fans are watching the drive as well. What do you feel the expectations were coming into this year for Oregon State?
I think there are more than what we've seen on the field, Grant. I don't think anybody felt that they'd make a bowl game, but I picked 5 wins. I thought they'd steal a couple. I thought they'd show progress through the season. And frankly, they haven't. Part of it is, the transition to Gary Anderson's offense, totally 180 from Mike Riley's pro style. Gary runs a spread. They've got a true freshman quarterback, and last week used 2 freshman quarterbacks. So, on the offensive end, they had a lot of players back. That's where I thought they'd really, still have some success, but I guess the transition to a totally different system has made it difficult. On the defensive end, they only had 2 returning starters. I still thought they could fill some gaps with some young guys, but against the good teams, that's been a major problem, and there's no question that Utah's a good team.
Yeah, I mean, how are fans holding up to those expectations? And you mentioned that they haven't met your expectations up to this point.
Well, it's a mixed bag. I mean, there's always the people on the message boards that are going to complain and say this guy can't coach, and it's ridiculous for them to do that, because you have to have some patience in this situation. The Pac-12 is loaded. There's very few weak teams. Most of the teams are on the rise. And at some point, Oregon State's going to be on the rise. But right now, it's he's got to get his own players in there and get, teach a system. And it's going to take a year or two for them to get on footing where they can feel like they're on firm ground.
Yeah, I mean, speaking of Gary Anderson and then bringing up the defensive side of Kalani Sitake, 2 Utah native coaches who have coached under Kyle Whittingham, do you think that familiarity is going to give them any kind of upper hand in this game?
I think it could if it was a competitive situation. I'm not sure it's going to be a competitive situation. I just don't know that they have the horses to play with Utah, especially on the road. If it were fairly even teams, there's no question it would help. And I'm not saying it's not going to help. I just don't think it's going to help enough to get Oregon State in the winning situation.
Okay, I mean, we're talking about Oregon State, and you're saying it's a tough situation. One of their strengths up to this point, they're 3rd in pass defense in the Pac-12. And, I'm wondering how are they doing that and being so efficient on the pass defensive side?
Well, part of it is that the run game, the other team's run game's been so successful they haven't had to throw. That's the frank part of it. I think they're 11th in total defense. I didn't look at it this week, but they're 11th or 12th. And they're in the lower end of almost every category. That's one of the ones with their, a little higher. But, again, rather than saying they have a really strong secondary, I think it's probably more that teams have been able to attack them with the run more than the pass.
So would you say that the Utah offensive line and Devontae Booker should be licking their chops, looking forward to this game?
There's no question Booker's a big a problem for the Beavers, Grant. They've gone up against good running backs such as McCaffrey from Stanford, and McCaffrey had a field day, although he's had that against a lot of teams. But it's just going to be very difficult. No, I don't think their linebacker play's been as good as they'd hoped. They lost all 3 of their linebackers, and before the season, the best returning linebacker, Daryl Sanji, was booted from school for rule at school that violation. So here we're in a situation where they're young and inexperienced. They've got one Romel Manuel's had a pretty good season, but the other linebackers have struggled. And, you know, their nose guard, Kyle Pecco, who's his first-year senior, was a JC transfer who couldn't get academically eligible last year. He actually had his best game last week. So, you know, there's some hope that they'll maybe be improved, but I just don't know if it's going to be good enough against Utah.
Okay, I mean, something interesting that we saw for the first time last week was the two freshman quarterbacks playing with Nick Mitchell and Seth Collins. You know, what brought about the two quarterbacks, and do you see them running with the two quarterbacks again this week?
I do. I think both quarterbacks will play. In the last week's game, Seth Collins played the first two series of both halves, and then Mitchell, who's a redshirt freshman, was with the program last year, played the other seven series. Mitchell played well when he first went in and made some good throws and had a couple dropped. But when he played in the second half, the game was on the line. It was 10-10 at halftime. They lost in the game 17-13 to Colorado. But, I mean, they were right there. They were behind 17-13. They had three final series in the last quarter. And I thought Mitchell played poorly, made some bad throws, and they needed him. I was surprised they didn't put Collins back in. Collins is a fantastic runner. I mean, he is a world-class speedster, and he's a very good runner and only an average passer who's learning the progressions, that sort of thing. But I thought they had a better chance to win with him in there, but the coaches evidently didn't. And, you know, in answer to your initial question, why did they do this? I guess they just thought that Seth wasn't giving them enough in the passing game, and they wanted to, the official answer is that they just thought both of them could be used to give them the best chance to win. But, you know, you have to take that as there was some sort of dissatisfaction with Seth Collins' play.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's interesting to me that, you know, it's only been a couple series for Seth Collins, almost like they're giving him some shots but a shorter leash. Would you agree with that statement?
I don't know if that's going to be the case this week. I think they just had planned to use Nick. You know, Seth had, I think, 9 carries for 50 yards in the first half. That's not bad. And so it wasn't that he played poorly, but and he was 4-for-7 in the passing game and had a drop. And, you know, Mitchell's numbers were worse than that, 9-for-24, 122 yards. So they're struggling for any kind of anything they can do to you know, get things going at both ends of the field.
Yeah, no, it's pretty obvious that it's been a tough season, will continue to be a tough season. But one of the bright spots seems to have been Jordan Villamon, who's been having a pretty good year and has clearly been one of the favorite receivers. I imagine he's going to be drawing Dominique Hatfield this coming game. How do you expect that matchup to play out, or do you think it'll be as exciting as maybe this last week with, you know, Dominique Hatfield and Juju Smith-Schuster were going back and forth at it even after the game?
Yeah, I haven't talked to any of the Utes coaches. Dennis Erickson and I are pretty close. I love Dennis when he was here, but I have not talked to him this week, and so I don't know if they're planning on playing man or cover two or how they're going to work it with Bill Villamon, but he'll get a lot of their attention, no question about that. He's a 6'5", 230-pounder who has pretty good speed, and, you know, it's a shame they haven't been able to get him and Victor Bolden the ball. Victor is another, he caught, I think, 70 passes last year in Mike Riley's system, and they've just not been able to get he and Jordan the ball enough. Those are two of their biggest weapons, and I'm sure they'll try to do that on Saturday.
Yeah, and I mean, Bolden would be a great player to get added to the mix. I mean, he's even showed his flair for playmaking on special teams, recently returning a kickback for a touchdown, I believe, in the Washington State game.
Yeah, 100 yards, tied the school record.
That's awesome. I mean, outside of the Villamon and Bolden, you know, the Utes are going to have to stop Nall in the backfield. How do you feel the Utes will be able to do that without their starting linebacker and Jared Norris?
Well, first of all, let me tell you about Ryan Nall. He's a redshirt freshman from Portland and came in as a 6'2", about 235. Mike Riley didn't know where to use him. He thought about linebacker, he thought about tight end and H-back, and then in his first spring, or I should say his first training camp, he used him some at running back. The new coaches, you know, that he redshirted last year, and the new coaches decided, kind of, they had the same quandary. Where do you use this kid? He's a terrific athlete. Told him he was going to be a tight end. So he bulked up to 255 pounds, came into camp. About 3 days later, they said, okay, we're going to switch you to running back. So he says, okay. So now he told me about a week ago that he was down to 238, but he is a physical specimen. He's a guy, Grant, like the Stanford quintessential Stanford running backs of the past, Brad Muster, that type, Tyler Gaffney, who is big and tough, and he is a weapon. He had 122 yards on 20 carries and a touchdown last week. He doesn't go down on first contact, so this kid should be the running back of the future for their team, and I think it might even change the way that Gary goes a little bit about his offense from just running a triple option type thing to maybe we'll line up with a couple tight ends and see what we can do with this kid.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like he could be he's a pretty exciting back to watch.
Well, like I said, he doesn't go down on first contact. He kind of, you know, he bounces off the pile and he'll gain you 2 or 3 yards rather than being stopped at the line of scrimmage usually. So, and as Gary says, you know, he's faster than you think. He gets out into the open field. He hasn't done that yet. So we'll see what he can do. But yeah, he's a talent. And as Gary said, if we get 30 or 40 more of these kids, we're going to be all right.
I think every team would say that about kids on their team. You know, it's clearly a rebuilding of the program that Gary Anderson's going through, and it sounds like he's got some good young pieces. I mean, how many years do you think it'll be before Oregon State, you know, that up-and-coming team that you were referencing earlier with a lot of the Pac-12 teams?
Well, he's not going to lose too many of his players. He's going to lose his center on offense, a good player, Josh Mitchell. He might lose Isaac Samola to the draft early. He's a guard who probably play tackle this week. They've got some injuries in the front line, but those two kids are tough. And then Storm Woods has not had a good year, the senior running back. So I don't, you know, I'm not sure how much they'll miss him. And then they'll miss Kyle Pecco, the nose tackle. But other than that, I mean, they've got most of their talent back, and he's got a pretty good recruiting class going. It looks like a few 4 stars, a ton of 3 stars. And, you know, it's a hard-working group. I like Gary. I like Kalani Sitake. You know, a lot of those guys are, your listeners are familiar with them from their years with Utah. And I don't know how long it's going to take, but they're working as fast as they can to get it done.
Okay, cool. Well, I know there's going to be, eventually in a couple of years, we'll probably be traveling up to Oregon State. So, I'm wondering if you could give us some good lunch recommendations for any team, any fans that might travel up to see the Beavers and Utes play when that happens.
Oh boy! In Corvallis, what's it called? Flat Tail down on the waterfront on Front Avenue is the one that all the coaches go to. You know, other than that, you know, what I would say is go down to the First Avenue and Front Avenue along the Willamette River. It's a nice little setting, and there's an assortment of bars and restaurants, and I live in Portland, so I'm only down there once a week or so, and however, I grew up in Corvallis, but that was many years ago, and it's changed so much that all the restaurants are different, but there's a half dozen down there that Utes fans would enjoy stopping in and having a little partaking in food and beverage.
All right. Well, thanks for coming on with me, Kerry, to talk about Oregon State and this upcoming matchup with Utah. Hopefully we have a good game on Saturday.
My pleasure, Grant. Thank you.
This has been a Cornplay Sports production.